The new book, Don't Label Me, shows that America's founding genius is diversity of thought. The book explains why social justice activists won't win by labeling those who disagree with them. It says at a time when minorities are fast becoming the majority, a truly new America requires a new way to tribe out. Enter Irshad Manji and her dog Lily. Raised to believe that dogs are evil, Manji overcame her fear of the other to adopt Lily. She got more than she bargained for. Defying her labels as an old blind dog, Lily engages Manji in a taboo-busting conversation about identity, power, and politics. Again, the name of the new book is Don't Label Me, and we welcome Irshad Manji to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Very happy to be with you, too.
What led you to this particular conversation?
Well, Joe, as a poster child of multiculturalism, or at least that's the way I've been treated for most of my life, I have been in a unique position to observe how diversity gets practiced. And over the last number of years, I have noticed that diversity is getting practiced as labeling. So, for example, somebody would be a feminist, somebody else is seen as Jewish, still somebody else as African American. I myself have several labels that are always attached to me: Muslim, lesbian, Canadian. And of course, there's always the quote, loathed straight white guy. And I have to say, I'm troubled by all of this because I think it is the flip side, this labeling, of what the early American colonists did. You know, they took individuals and sliced and diced them up into categories and then assigned value to those categories and created a hierarchy. And it's my view that we are doing the same today in the name of progress. And I don't see what is progressive about reviving that kind of mindset. I'm really advocating for a much more honest diversity in this book.
You make it very clear on the book jacket itself that civility isn't the reason to repair our caustic chasms. Diversity is. Where does that leave civility?
Civility is important, of course, but obviously much damage can be done simply by being civil to one another. When there is an obviously racist or misogynistic or homophobic incident, you're not called upon to be civil as such. You're called upon, if you're going to be an ethical citizen, you're called upon to deal with that incident, to get involved in the solution in some way. But I have to be very clear that it doesn't mean that you be caustic in the process. In fact, what I'm finding is that there is so much shaming going on in our society, particularly online, but not just exclusively online, that people who are seen as offenders, who are seen as sexist or racist or misogynists, are being demeaned. And when they're demeaned because they are shamed, then we're not actually dealing with the situation. We're actually, as the shamers, we are sowing the seeds of backlash. So shaming is not the way to deal with obvious incidents of intolerance. Rather, we have to be firm even as we are civil. And what I am asking people to do here is treat the so-called offender as the individual that he or she is. And instead of labeling them, actually asking them questions like, where does that kind of behavior come from? I'm curious. Or I'm sincere when I ask you, why do you believe what you believe? And it's only by engaging people with genuine questions that we're able to lower emotional defenses on their part and then be able to get a fair hearing ourselves. To just, summarize my very long answer in one statement, if you want to be heard, you first need to be willing to hear. And that is an ironclad law of human psychology.
Why do you think that so often our psychology includes the need for labels?
Well, it's a biological necessity, actually. We are all, regardless of who we are, whatever the culture we're in, we are all born with brains that have not actually evolved very much since the days of our ancestors being on the savannah. You know, back then, everything was a potential threat to someone's security, anything that moved. And so the brain evolved in such a way as to determine that anything that is alive is a potential threat to your security. And here's the crazy thing. We now live in a society in which everything is not a potential threat. And yet the brain, the primitive part of the brain, doesn't know that. So when we're being disagreed with, for example, or when we hear something that is offensive to us, the brain will immediately secrete the signal that this is not mere discomfort that we're experiencing. Rather, it's a mortal danger. And so our defenses immediately go up. Our role today as evolved people is to outwit the primitive part of our brains, literally outsmart them. And we do that, and this will sound deceptively simple. It's simple, all right, but it's not deceptive. It actually works. Our role as evolved citizens then is to take a deep breath, literally slow down the blood rush in our bodies, slow jam the brain, so that we are giving our bodies the time to turn what would be a caustic reaction into a constructive response. And when we can turn that into a habit, we'll find that it's actually much easier both to get our view across and potentially to change the mind of the person who is disagreeing with us.
Irsha Manji is the author of the new book, Don't Label Me, An Incredible Conversation for Divided Times. So enter Lily. The conversation that you have in this book is with your dog. It is with Lily. And give us a sense of how Lily came to this very important conversation.
Beautiful question and beautiful dog. So, you know, I've grown up as a Muslim. I remain a Muslim. And in many aspects of Muslim culture, dogs are devalued, I'm sorry to say. Now, they are all over the world. You know, many think of them as just property. But I actually grew up with a deathly fear of dogs. One year, I had a health crisis, and my then partner, now wife, Laura, she said to me, honey, you have to evolve out of this fear. You have to understand the healing properties of having a dog in your life. And so I took the risk of adopting Lily. Why Lily? Well, I'm a little embarrassed to say that, you know, she's old and she's blind. And frankly, I felt sorry for her. Nobody else wanted a rescue who is a senior dog, first and foremost, and then one who can't see. I adopted her, Joe, and man, did my life change. Yes, she was old and blind. Yes, those were her labels, but she was so much more than that. She was the most independent being you ever had the pleasure of being around. You know, the wind would blow in one direction. Lily would stick her nose up in the air and enjoy it all. I would clap in order to bring her, you know, in my direction, and she would continue sort of plowing into the wind. The point is that Lily herself showed me that labels can never perfectly or accurately capture any sentient being. And so I decided that the way to make these very heavy ideas relatable is by turning it into a conversation with my dog. And since Lily was also a very sassy being, she plays the role in the book of the being who challenges me at every turn. And what that means is I had to write a book that role modeled the kind of conversation that I'm asking my readers to have with their other, be that a political other, a religious other, or in my case, you know, a biological other, a species other. Lily really is the heart and soul of Don't Label Me.
You are not talking to your dog, teaching your dog, nor is the dog teaching you. It is a conversation where you're both teaching each other.
That's right. And the truth is, as absurd as that may sound, I could actually imagine the words that I attribute to Lily in the book spilling out of her mouth, if indeed she spoke English. I'll tell you a quick story. Lily was a very decisive dog, and she didn't give kisses very easily. Well, one afternoon, I slathered peanut butter all over my lips. She loved peanut butter, and if I may be so bold, so do I. So it was hardly a sacrifice on my part. But I slathered them all over my lips because I wanted to lure a kiss from Lily. Well, I called her, and she walked up. She smelled the peanut butter. She got closer. And then when she realized that this was all a ploy to get her affection, she pivoted and walked away. And in that moment, besides laughing at my pathetic self, you know, I realized that this is what we human beings do. We manipulate one another in order to get what we want, only to realize that what we've really done is set up a situation where we don't get what we want because the other party has sniffed out our scheme. And this became an insight into how labels are used to manipulate. And that's just one of many stories I can give you and indeed give the reader for why Lily was so central to my understanding, not just of how diversity is done dishonestly today, but more importantly, how it can be done honestly.
The interesting part about this is that diversity, of course, can often come from a good place, that we're thinking about making diversity to bring and to introduce diversity as a remedy. And what you point out is that often what happens is that we're creating more problems or we're even spotlighting the very problem that we're trying to solve.
Right. Spotlighting a problem is one thing, but to deal with it in a way that worsens it is another. And so, for example, let's talk about the word diversity. A lot of people who are not yet advocates of diversity feel that this is a word and a practice that divides. And the reason I think they are right that in the way it's done, diversity divides, is that, as I said earlier, we're slapping labels on people. You know, we're counting how many women in the room, how many LGBT people in the room, how many African Americans in the room. Do we have enough? Okay, then we have diversity. But that is not diversity. You know, even within groups, individuals exist, meaning that there is variance within groups. And the real question then that we need to be asking is, how do we move beyond labels? Well, one of the important ways we can do that is by recognizing that it's not just diversity of complexion or gender or religion that matters, rather diversity of viewpoint matters critically. Because as I say, I'm Muslim, but, you know, I advocate for an Islam that is not mainstream. I advocate for an Islam that puts liberty and love ahead of fear. And there are some people like me in the faith today, but there are more people today who would put fear of God, for example, ahead of liberty and love. And so you can see that even within that group known as Muslims, there is variety. And so if we're asking not just what identity does that person have, but also how does that person think? What do I not yet know about this person simply because of the label that I've given to them? That's when we really delve into the fascinating aspect of diversity. And that's when we come to know each other as human beings and as individuals and not just as mascots of this or that tribe, which is exactly why, you know, I make the distinction between dishonest diversity and honest diversity. The dishonest kind fixates on labels. The honest kind moves beyond labels. I'm not for a minute suggesting, by the way, that we can't be using labels. I mean, labels are a fixture of our language, of anybody's language. So I get that. But let's use labels only as a starting point for further exploration, not as the finish line that shuts down conversation.
So how do we work that? And I'm going to ask you a very pointed question here. And So help me out. So we on this program, the very program that we're talking on, we have a segment that's our panel segment. And one of the things that I hear very commonly when I go out is I would like to see more diversity on the panel. Now, we often try for diverse opinions. And But if those opinions do not, and this also is on the radio, so that people then, they don't know necessarily skin color. They don't necessarily know even gender. And So how do you then make that so, even if it's right to us, even if it's right to the host, when does it then become right to the audience so that it's accepted as a conversation that should be taken seriously?
Well, Joe, I have to say, I love the fact that on radio, you don't necessarily know what the labels are that people either ascribe to or that you would ascribe to them.
As do I.
That's right. That's as it should be, because what really matters is how they think and what they believe. Now, obviously, on the radio, anybody can say, as a a queer Muslim or as a straight white guy, I believe so and so. But understand, and this is part of what makes diversity so so interesting, is that even when they put those labels on themselves, they don't speak for everybody who shares those same labels. So it's frankly we, the viewers or the listeners, the consumers of media, who have to remember that each and every person can speak only for him or herself. Even when they are citing facts, how they spin those facts or what their interpretation of those facts is relates to who they are and how they see the world, not necessarily how everybody who is part of the same group sees the world. And that is exactly why, looking for individuality is such a good practice when you are trying to do diversity. By the way, Joe, I mentioned this word individuality. Let me be very clear. I do not conflate it. I do not equate it with individualism. Individualism states that I'm out for myself and I don't care if my society benefits. That's not individuality. Individuality states I am myself, my unique self. And by expressing that uniqueness, I enrich my society. It's the latter that makes diversity such a welcome and worthy pursuit.
When you talk about pursuits, and we'll end with this, it is often, no matter our differences, that we are trying to find a common ground. We are trying to find peace, some sort of accord that allows us to live with one another in some sort of harmony, as perhaps crippling as that cliche is. Is that accurate? We can achieve that, right? We can still get to the point where we can have a lot of different views and people can talk and we'll listen to each other and not leave the conversation thinking, well, okay, but I'm still right.
Well, that's a really good question. And I am hopeful that we can indeed get to that point, but we've got a long way to go. For example, Joe, in January, an academic paper was released, and the title of that paper was Lethal Mass Partisanship, emphasized the word lethal. In this paper, the scholars, their research concludes that today, almost 20% of Democrats and almost 15% of Republicans say that violence of some scale would be justified against the other party. Now, in such a hyperpolarized environment that is actually flirting with physical damage against the people any of us disagrees with, you would think, how in the heck are we going to get to the point where we, even if we don't find common ground, where we can walk away and say, well, that was a really good conversation? Well, I'll tell you how we don't get there. We don't get there simply by rolling our eyes and deciding that because you're a Democrat or you're a Republican, both of which are labels, I have nothing to talk to you about. Rather, we voters, we citizens, we human beings really do need to work with the biology that we have, namely these brains, to take that deep breath and rather than state something to the other, ask the other questions about why they believe what they believe. And here's a really key part too, listen. Listen enough that the other person's emotional defenses as well as your own will come down. And I guarantee the listener today that if you try that in any one of your relationships, it doesn't have to be with somebody who has the opposite politics of you. It can even be with a family member with whom you have a broken relationship. Try this approach and watch what happens. People will be transformed. But again, that initiative isn't going to come from politicians and it isn't going to come from other people. If you're really interested in finding common ground, it has to come from you first. And my contention is that when you do that, when you take this approach of honest diversity, you'll both be able to find common ground as well as stand your ground. Listening does not have to mean agreeing with, but you'll be surprised how much you can learn and grow when you decide to engage with someone whom you would have through a label written off before.
The name of the book is Don't Label Me, an incredible conversation for divided times. It is published by St. Martin's Press. Irshad Manji, I thank you very much for sharing with us. What a beautiful conversation. I appreciate your time.
Really enjoyed it as well, Joe. Thank you. And Lily, thanks you too.
Best to Lily. Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is Don't Label Me, an incredible conversation for divided times. It's published by St. Martin's Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.